Hey, everybody. So first off, this is Rila Kuma, very close. Since this is a social media conference, can we give a quick wave? Because I feel like we need a tweet from stage. Yeah? I know it's early, but hello. OK, cool. So sending this out there. OK, done. So anyway, hello, I'm Jeremy. Thank you, Bernie, for the great intro. I want to talk to you guys today about becoming a content and social media powerhouse and to actually really make those two things play well together. Because one thing that often I encounter is there's an organization that does a great job at one of these two and has significant hurdles in the other. So just to kind of first say, does it really matter? Is it actually important to make these two disciplines work well together? And this is one stat, and this is actually an aggregate of a number of different sites that I looked at. What I found what was really interesting here is that you see so many different times that a site gets 0 to 10 seconds of a visit, and then people bounce. And why is that? Is it because the social media manager got the wrong people to the site in the first place, or because the content wasn't delivering on the promise of the social media seeding that was occurring across every single social channel? So the answer is kind of somewhere in between. So we're probably not going to get to all of this today based off of time, and I have a sixth part here too. But we're going to talk about what helps you actually leapfrog the competition. How do you maximize social spend to get the best possible ROI? How do you make your content development, marketing, and social media work well together? How many of you here, just quick show of hands, wear more than one hat? Content, marketing, content. Right, and that's, in some ways, it actually becomes harder to determine like which hat you're wearing when. Then also, in addition to that, how do you use other people's data as well as your own analytics to create this great content? So, in terms of leapfrogging the competition, what does that actually mean and how do we do that? In addition to our best practices, I wanted to take actual practitioners. And what we do is we actually help companies future-proof themselves by anticipating what's going to be happening next with social media and content marketing. We spoke to 65 community managers and social media managers across 8 industries with an average of 7.1 years of experience. And we wanted to say, not just here's what works for us, but this is what works. And it says pre-search intentionally, because the goal of this is to do a little bit of preliminary research and then to actually put out a full research paper based off of best practices and what very productive people do to get ahead. So here are some of the things that we found. And first off, I'll tell you actually what works for you. I actually want to know, and I'm going to write back to everybody who tweets at me. Obviously, you've got the SMS summit there, but tweet me, Jerem Marketer, and let me know. And I want to include your feedback, because practitioners are actually the people who matter in the case of this. So organization, how many of you use Trello or Asana or something else to actually be more productive? Okay, great, because Trello was, in our research, cited as the number one thing that people use in terms of being really productive and getting the most social media out there, and also working well with other teams if somebody else controls content, and then you control social media. Well, how do you actually collaborate? And things like Slack are good, but generally speaking, we heard these, as well as Google Docs and Basecamp to a lesser extent. Keeping calm and prioritizing, we think, is so important. In one, and this is something that actually I tell my team all the time, if you have 19 things that you have to get done today, but in reality you can only get done 13 of those things, just make sure it's the right 13. You know, if things 14 and on from a priority standpoint don't happen, that's okay, because we're all limited in terms of what we can get done in any given day. You've got to be able to do that, and this is why this ties in perfectly with organization. And finding the tools that are right for you and your organization, there are a lot of enterprise tools out there that people use that do a number of different aspects of your social media curation and engagement. These are the ones that were cited the most in our preliminary research. Just to call out one or two that I really love, If This Then That or Zapier, are great for stitching services together and letting you do two things with one step. So for instance, if you post to Instagram, then automatically syndicate that to Twitter. Those are things that you can do pretty easily there. Social Bro and Manage Flitter, on the other hand, are great for overall community organization. So if I happen to be speaking in Las Vegas, I can actually go to Twitter and I can say, let me find all of my Las Vegas people and then do a curated direct message campaign, which is something that I find basically nobody does and is a ridiculously great ROI because you've built that community already and you've got access to them, especially when you're gonna send them things that are very particular to those individuals. Don't spam, in other words. So positivity, be positive at all times. You're gonna wind up having a lot of things that are going to be unexpected, that are gonna be thrown onto your plate. You thought you were gonna be working on one thing and have 8 hours to work on one campaign, and then instead your boss throws something and says, we need a new Snapchat strategy, go ahead and do it. So I find being positive at all times really helps. One of the things that I like to do is I like to go in the middle of the forest and do yoga with a lot of fireflies around me. So I thought, what do you know? Like, what are the odds I would find this art? Don't burn out, okay? You can't get burned out with campaigns that are seemingly nonstop. So walks and other ways to get away from the screen, and statistics have actually borne this out, increase productivity. They increase productivity for other industries and functions as well, but in particular when you're working with social media, where sometimes people feel like there's a 24-hour workday, and no matter what, somebody's gonna be tweeting your brand at 3 a.m. and you're worried, oh no, I missed that, and somebody else is gonna see it first and call me irately. It's very important to actually de-stress, get away, and you're gonna sometimes get your best ideas that way. And then multiplying yourself, because dog slides in consecutive slides is generally best practice. The community manager can't do everything themselves. It's very important to try to curate a group of people who can be brand advocates so that you can reach out to these people beforehand and say, listen, we're running a campaign, give them a little bit of a heads up. And one of the best things is when we advise a brand and then that brand winds up getting 25 people who are actually gonna be answering product questions before the brand even gets to it, it becomes a self-sustaining community. And that's the type of thing that all of us should really aspire to, because if somebody else is talking on behalf of your brand, it's so much more potent than you doing it. You're biased. When somebody else is talking on behalf of your brand, that's really powerful. Whatever works, repeat it. So yes, this is the same image intentionally. I showed this to my team and they were like, you forgot that you had that visual. I'm like, no, I didn't. So marketers who are investing 40 or more hours per week on social media are 42% more likely to be focused on Instagram than people who are not investing a lot of time. And there are a lot of different ways you can read that statistic, but I found what's really interesting is you have companies that double down on something that works. So Instagram, people found that they have a lot of organic reach. How many of you have noticed that your organic reach has gone down dramatically on Facebook over the last year or two? Right, so people realized Instagram is actually working for them, so let's do more on it. And people who were not investing a lot of time on social media did not discover this, and as a result, weren't spending a lot of time on Instagram. So you have to strike a balance between what is going to be intellectually stimulating for you, such as launching your brand on Snapchat, and what are the things that are actually keeping the lights on. And then old school. This is something that is very interesting, that some of the most productive people that we spoke to in our preliminary research, these are actual quotes for their hacks. My hack is that I use something that everybody used a generation ago. But we realized that actually switching in between being in front of the iPad or laptop and then something else actually spurs creativity, and there are statistics to back that up. So it's the kind of thing that I think more and more people are realizing, that a little mix of the old school goes a long way. You don't want to be the kind of person who doesn't know how to like restart your iOS app, but you do want to be somebody who actually uses a little bit of old technology and takes advantage of it. In terms of maximizing your social spend to get the best possible ROI, okay, this is something that I think that more and more people are realizing, that they're spending a lot of money and time and effort on social media. We actually have to get a return on it. There was a few years ago where anybody who wanted to could go to their CEO and could say, we're not doing enough on social, we gotta do more on social. And now we've kind of come to the new reality where social media has to perform and serve some type of business function. Otherwise, should we be doing it in a business? It's an honest question. So one thing that a lot of people still believe, especially at an executive level, maybe even above some of the people in this room, is that social media is free. And it is not free by any stretch of the imagination, but I just need to really emphasize that. You can't be wasting your team's time developing content that is gonna have no visibility because it's seeded on channels that either don't have a paid spend behind them or that you're not spending that much time in terms of growing. We actually encountered a brand that was on 5 platforms. So we said, well, what's your time breakdown from one platform to another? And they said, well, it's 5 platforms. So we spent 20% of our time on each one. And the problem with that is that they're now not succeeding on any, or they weren't, so they actually cut out 2 of them, and now they're able to over-resource one in particular. When you look at all these different titles, you've got general managers, you have content strategists and development people, a lot of different types of roles. You're paying these people, okay? So it's not just about the advertising costs, and if you can't support a channel with an ad spend, it's also about the human cost. You've got to really think about where you allocate your resources accordingly in your organization. And then experimentation, okay? This stat is a few months old, but social media ads only represent about 14% of digital ad spending. A lot of people in this room are smart enough to know that digital, in particular display ads, are a thing of the past. That is such an over-resourced part of overall digital media spend still. To this day, that things are going to shift over more and more. And as a result, it becomes increasingly important to get onto new platforms and try out new types of ads before other people do. A perfect example is that we did experimentation when LinkedIn ads first launched years ago and had a 2,100% ROI on our campaigns. Doing that same exact campaign now will net us about a 60% ROI, okay? And that's because everybody sees them, and then everybody gets used to them, and then they're not interesting anymore. And this is gonna be true throughout human history. This is a natural thing about humans, okay? If I see somebody being mugged in New York, where I'm from now, I would actually pay attention. Growing up in the 80s, I called that Tuesday. So it's just a matter of like what's actually standing out. Now, when we talk about finding the right process for your organization, very important to figure out what's going to work for you. But after you do this experimentation, don't just, you know, let it go by the wayside. What we do is we test, we observe, and then we actually turn it into code. And so it's an officially a part of our observations for a particular industry or just in general. If we notice something works, then we're gonna actually notate it so that in the future, we don't have to have somebody else in the organization run that same type of experiment, right? It's obvious, but you would be surprised at how many organizations don't do it. Somebody agrees. So don't stand still. You can actually, so this is a great quote from Mark Zuckerberg. He founded some website that I think we were talking about before. You can save actually as much as 40% of your overall spend by iterating very quickly on your campaigns. So if you actually discover that something doesn't work and then you kill it and then you launch a new campaign, it's essentially the whole entire idea of run 2, figure out which one does better, kill 1, and then run another one to go against the victor. Now, assigning values. Whenever we're talking about, and this is actually a perfect example, a lot of organizations that do e-commerce business, they will track spend and they'll say, well, we spent this amount, these are the number of e-commerce transactions that we got out of it. Therefore, that's what we can calculate our ROI purely based off of that. But the problem is, let's say if you sell a lot in retail, okay, and you send people to your store locator page based off of a social media campaign, are you saying that each one of those visits counts as nothing? You know, of course not. You have to have an assumption and say, well, 30% of those people, let's say, went to the store locator, then they visited a store, and then they were likely to make a transaction. So you actually have to assign numerical values to each one of these things in order to calculate a true ROI, as opposed to just ignoring a few of these things and assuming that they have no value. Then you've got to go even one step further and determine the lifetime value. You can also look at this in relation to lifetime value times conversion rate. Take under account things like average transaction amount, and then one thing that's interesting a lot of people don't do is that if they use social media to acquire somebody as a customer, and they previously had noticed it costs us $14 per acquisition and pay per click, well, you actually have to give credit to your social media campaign for saving you that $14, right? And that's essentially a hidden ROI. And when you're making a case to somebody at a senior level in order to get the approval, it's just important to factor in all of these different attributes. So making all these different aspects of your program work well together. I know a lot of people here are wearing multiple hats, but it's very important to make sure that you have the right people in the right roles. So this good-looking guy in the corner, that actually is me. I don't know if you can tell. This is the rest of our team, or a portion of our team, our creative director, head of advertising, head of finance. So these are great people, you know, do a really good job in their particular functions. So if I moved over and put Andy as the head of creative and we just shuffled the deck, you would expect awful results because I've seen him open Photoshop and it's not pretty. And this is the kind of thing that we know when you talk about very, very different disciplines. But when we talk about very similar on the surface disciplines, people think that you can shift people around. You can say, well, we're gonna take this content strategist and put them now in charge of actually developing our content, right? And those are very different disciplines, right? It's not necessarily the same individual. So very important to keep that in mind. So just to kind of get on soapbox for a little bit, because I feel very strongly about this, is that content development and content marketing are not the same thing, okay? Everybody that I speak to, or I shouldn't say everybody, but there are a lot of people who say, content is content, right? Why don't I have just one content person? And then I go over with them the different aspects of that role. Okay, so you want somebody who knows exactly when to post certain things in order to get the maximum effect, right? And they're like, yeah. So you want somebody to be able to write long form and short form and take good photos also. And they're like, yeah. So, I mean, a generation ago, you wouldn't have thought that these are the same thing. You wouldn't have ever hired somebody and said and expected them to excel at 9 different things at the same time. So sometimes the answer is, if somebody has to wear multiple hats and they can do it okay, let them do it. But generally speaking, you might have to hire freelancers. You might have to make the case for additional help. Don't assume because somebody can do one of these things that they can necessarily do the other. If you can find somebody who's great at 2 different aspects of this job, great, but that's often not the case. This is actually, I think, a really great quote to be thinking about content marketers versus content strategists. A content strategist is more likely to think about content within the scope of the whole organization. And where does it really fit in, and what does it say about us? And it's a little bit more macro. But a content marketer is just, let me take this content and put it in 40 different places. Let me work with a development team to actually manipulate this content and rework it. So and this white paper becomes a podcast, becomes a long form article, becomes a guest post, right? So these are very different disciplines. And then hire properly. I've actually seen all too often, I think a lot of us have, where a company brings on somebody and doesn't really define the role that well. And if they say, we need a content person or a social media person for that matter, well, what does that actually mean, okay? If you say, we just need somebody who's good at social media, and then you hire somebody who has a great background with Facebook and Twitter, but then it turns out that 2 months later you decide, well, we really want to be great at Snapchat and Vine. Those are not necessarily the same thing. You shouldn't be hiring the same person irrespectively of that aspect of the role. So how do you use other people's data to create great content? And something that I think that a lot of people want some tactical advice that they can take home. So I first say, and I think that this is something I can't say enough, there's two types of content. There's zig and there's zag, okay? Now a zig is kind of like if you want to do something that's going to get a little bit of return on investment, but is guaranteed to not get a lot, right? Then zig is the way to go, okay? It might build upon something. It's easier to do it. If you just do anything about the New Hampshire primary the day after the New Hampshire primary, it's gonna do okay, right? Now a zag might take notice of a topic's popularity, but it says, okay, how can I spin this in a way that nobody else is doing it? So I might go for a grand slam, or I might strike out. That's kind of the difference, the way that we define it. Now Google Trends, this is a great way to find content from which you can zig or zag. Obviously talking about the Super Bowl just at the right time is going to net you great effect, and this is publicly available information when you're trying to figure out how to really drum up some engagement with your audience. I always say not to underestimate widgets. There are free widgets all over the world. Google Trends, you can actually pull from multiple locales, embed them into even a local web page that you hold on your own laptop, and then just load it whenever you want to. So if you serve US and Canada, in this case, I can look to see what are the hot topics in each one. YouTube Trends. I think this is really interesting. If you look at same age bracket, but males in New York City versus females in Las Vegas, and they're paying attention to completely different YouTube content. So knowing more about your audience allows you to spin your content in different ways. It lets you know what people are thinking about and talking about. There's a very strong correlation in videos that are doing well, they're often being talked about. So you don't have to worry about, well, maybe people are watching this, but it's not a big topic of conversation. So a number of searches let me know, how many people watch the Super Bowl? We're in the US, so I feel like a decent number. Okay, fine. Did anybody see the puppy monkey baby commercial? Yeah? So, right. So doing a zag style post long form on puppy monkey baby at the right time will do well. If I do something not just like, this was a weird commercial, and I post something about it, because everybody's gonna do that. But if I go in the unexpected direction and do, I just happen to do this right after I saw that, so it got like 50 retweets, 80 likes, and that's more than average for me. But the key thing is I was actually thinking, ooh, this will be a great example for this week. Let me go do it. And I was surprised by how well it did. So perfect. That's the kind of thing that anybody can replicate on the brand side. They just have to be paying attention at the right time and to try to draw a unexpected parallel. So Feedly, if you see those little orange, it's really small, but if you see those orange numbers in that second column to the left over there, you can see things that are actually on fire, what topics are popping. Feedly is a great RSS reader for those of you who don't use it. You can use another RSS reader. I think this one's the best. Letting you know what's being shared the most as a what's hot barometer is a great way to discover new forms of content that you can get out there on behalf of your brand and you can even build off of. And then, this is something that I noticed a while ago. This was last summer. F. Scott Fitzgerald, love him as an author. There was a new short story discovered that he had written. There was not a single review about it. So actually, by doing this research, I discovered that a lot of people were talking about it. Not as many as the new To Kill a Mockingbird prequel, but this let me know by doing this search, from planning from a content perspective, if I was running an editorial website, I could actually post something like that and get the number one spot on Google right at that time because I had done the research. And I see that it's not as hot as Harper Lee's thing. That's the red line, but you can go for the long tail, and then you can actually rank really well. So, wanna dance. So Facebook Trends is something a lot of us don't even pay a lot of attention to, but very beneficial in terms of finding interesting things out that people are talking about. It's a little bit of an echo chamber, but it's kind of interesting. Bing Trends, the answer to this one, I was sad to find out it was not quinoa, but Bing actually has this interactive survey that they do every week, or not survey, little quiz that you can take based off of the most frequent searches of the last week. So this is a great way to get some unexpected content ideas. And then even job trends, you can work with this. This is from Indeed.com, and you can look to see what are the most popular searches for jobs, the most popular jobs that are being posted, and then even what are the hottest markets, which can give great content ideas from an unexpected location. And then using your analytics to create great content. Now, there are a lot of different tools that we use, that we test out, that we recommend. Lead Forensics happens to be one good one because you can actually discover who's visiting your website, and you can figure out a little bit more about those companies. We discovered that a lot of agencies and educational institutions were checking out Firebrand, and as a result, we started building out more content for their benefit, and I wouldn't have known that otherwise. I would have just known basic Google Analytics information, such as where people are visiting from, right? HubSpot, there are other CRMs that you can use to do things like this, but you can actually figure out, ask people questions, and then model people's behavior to figure out their personas. We call people things like CMO Seymour or Digital Danny, and we had certain hypotheses about how many people were in each group for Firebrand or for the brands that we work with. And then we discover, actually, we were close to accurate, but there were a few pivots from an information standpoint that we had to make. So thinking hyper-global and acting hyper-local. This is a fun little trick that I feel like a lot of people don't do, and this is kind of a little bit more technical. If you have an email database, or if you have a CRM in general, you're gonna have a lot of IP address information, okay? You can actually pull down that information, create a list of everybody who you have, and then take the data, put it into a tool like this IPLegends tool that I use, and then upload it back. And then I discover a lot of things, such as what companies people work at, right? So I have Apple computer there. I didn't know that I had Apple people subscribing to our database, which is useful if we're helping an app get recommended, you know, to the App Store as an Apple pick. I also can find out time zone, city, state, and locale, and I can append that to the user record in perpetuity. Now, this is the kind of thing that, you know, chances are almost everybody in this room is sitting on IP address information that you're not using from a targeting perspective, only because, you know, we've done studies on this, and it's been something like upwards of 90% of people aren't doing this, but yet this is data that they have. Google Analytics, this is a quick little trick, is that even if you don't have access to all of the fine data that you used to get from Google Analytics from a keyword standpoint, you can look to see which are the pages that are doing best from an SEO perspective. And from that, you can extrapolate which are the topics that are the hottest. We would do a lot on Snapchat geofilters, which told us that we needed to create different pages that address different aspects of Snapchat geofilters. Then we also started building out orange papers, which are essentially white papers, but fun. And we created one about Snapchat, and that actually did very well for us. Had like 600 downloads, our goal was to get 200. So a lot of that is just based off of looking to see what's doing well and building more content off of it. I'll just go quickly for these last few. Age demographics, A lot of people think that they know what their age demographics are, and then when they look, they might actually notice they're skewing a little bit older or younger than they might be at retail or than they might be on social media. So it's really interesting to look at that as you're developing content. Not all audiences are created equal. These are two different brands that in past lives I had worked with where they were both surprised to look at the breakdown of male-female. This was a beauty brand that had 13% males, and they weren't spending any time trying to market to them. It was just essentially everybody got the same message regardless. So if you look at these, rather than assuming that you know everything about your audience, if you're sitting on data, use the data. Now, Twitter redirect links. You can actually discover that you're getting some traffic from places you would have never expected. If I look to see that rd.to link over there, if I go to the bottom, I'll see that it actually links to this t.co Twitter short link, right? And I'm gonna go ahead. You can actually go in your Google Analytics and find all those different gibberish short links there. I'm searching all the different inbound links from a Twitter perspective. And then, based off of that, I ran a search for one of those short links in Google, and then I discovered, hey, Firebrand is running a awards for the best in class in digital media, and the WWE, which was nominated for an award, they actually shared it out. And as a result of discovering that, we kept on letting them know they're very close and the competition's gonna be done soon. So bit by bit, they started like actually pushing it more and more and more to the end point that we realized that out of all the brands that had promoted this, well over 90% of the traffic that we ever received happened to be from the WWE. And then just a few quick real-time content creation best practices, just because I figured the Super Bowl just happened and there are all these other real-time events that are happening. When you've got to make decisions very quickly to do well, how do you actually do that? And I just thought a few quick rules are to not overthink it. We have seen that one of the top things that people do wrong in a situation like this is that they have too much of a process built out. To the point that maybe there are three approvals that have to happen on a real-time piece of content that the moment actually passes and the content that got produced or was close to being done never actually goes live. And that's just sad because if you have too many approvals and something can't get out in time, then you shouldn't even bother doing it in the first place, right? So limiting your time. I found that this works really well, and there's a certain element of diminishing returns. If you have to get a piece of content out there in an hour, okay, if you spend 50 minutes on it, it's probably gonna be just as good. If you spend 40 minutes, it's probably gonna be just as good. If you tell yourself that there's a certain time limit in creating it, then you're gonna notice that you do a lot better, and that you don't hem and haw and turn it into a 3.5 hour thing, and then before you know it, the moment has passed. So be relevant to your audience. Can't stress this enough. I think something happens and people say, ooh, this would be great, because there are a lot of people talking about it. And then they forget to think, well, wait a minute. We are a cookie brand, and this is the New Hampshire primary, and there's not a connection that we can necessarily find that quickly. If you can't find the connection, if you can't be relevant to your audience, don't jump on something just because it's very popular. I've actually seen brands, if you look at Google Analytics, when people do really great at sending a lot of traffic that's off-brand to their website, then they'll have a 99% bounce rate off of that traffic, which is just sad because, again, you worked to get the traffic, but it wasn't the right traffic. And then this is just an example, actually, when I went to Inbound Conference last year, before I went up and spoke, I looked to see what was everybody else talking about, just to get a sense of the audience. This is something that if you're doing a real-time event, if you're hosting an event, or if your brand is sponsoring one, you can actually go in, quickly grab all of the public data, and create a Wordle at wordle.net. And then actually look to see the bigger words are the things that are being spoken about more often. And it's very beneficial to get a very quick read on the audience that you're engaging with. So plagiarizing is awful. that's the clinical word, awful. And there are often situations where you're trying to get something out there so quickly that you might not notice, you didn't you're just grabbing from other places, not rewriting, not paraphrasing. It's still awful. And there are plenty of brands that have thought, well, great, I'm going to get away with this. Nobody's really looking. Sometimes it's not even by intent, but it's still something that's considered worst practice. So if you can't get something up very quickly without doing this, then just don't do it at all. And then I think there's one more. And credit where credit's due, I think that this is actually tied to the plagiarism point, but actually pretty relevant. You want to make sure that you're giving credit where, when I'm taking quotes from people, actually even at the summit yesterday, I want to make sure that I tag them, right? And it's not just about giving them credit, it's also, it's about inviting them into the conversation. Because if you can invite other people in and make them part of it, then you're actually going to do better because people are more likely to retweet and share and so on. And then, this is it actually for me. So I was gonna say there's gonna be a cheat sheet and the research paper that's gonna come out of this. So obviously the slides are gonna be available through the summit, through that bit.ly link, but if you want the research paper that's gonna come out as a result, just text content to that number and you'll get it. So that's it for now.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
We have about... We have about 10 minutes or so for questions. My first question for you all is, did you get all that?
Yeah.
A lot, right? A lot in less than 45 minutes. So we have a question in the back here. Okay, give me a moment to make my way back there. And you know the drill. You got to wait for the microphone. And here you are.
Hello, Jeremy.
Hello.
I'm Anna. I have two questions, so hopefully I can ask them both at the same time. The first one is how exactly were you able to export the GEO data? I love the chart and all the results that came from that. And the second question is, could you summarize Zigzag again?
Yeah, definitely. I know I actually ran through that whole entire idea of downloading the data. A key thing is that when people have an email database or a CRM, then often you can select which particular aspect of the data you want to download. Generally, when you go to select all, then there are going to be some fields that you never uploaded in the first place. So if somebody clicks on a link, from a particular location, then that IP address is almost always going to be exposed and you're going to have it in your database. So if you download all, basically, download the entire database, you should be able to find that data. It depends, obviously, based off of what service you're using. And then the idea of zigging versus zagging, and this is obviously not an official term, it's just the way that I define it, is that you have the ability to go in the same direction as everybody else and hit a single, and it's almost a guaranteed single, right? And there are some people who's, from a job standpoint, they're incentivized to hitting singles, right? There are some people who their job is to hit a grand slam, and they are not going to be punished for totally failing often, right? That's why I don't say one is better than the other. They're just two different ways to go. And so Zag is basically taking more of a chance. You can be aware of what's going on in the world, but it doesn't mean you go the most obvious route with respect to exploiting it from a content perspective.
Great presentation, Jeremy. I was just curious, in the outreach that you've done, did you ask people about where they try and create that balance of evergreen content versus high trend content? Kind of what an average or a typical ratio is?
Yeah, there's actually a huge ratio. I love that question. Huge ratio based off of a number of factors. Okay, one thing is the size of the company. Generally speaking, what we found is that actually the mid-sized companies are more likely to do it well. The small companies are often small because they haven't been doing things right in the first place. The big ones, there are too many layers of bureaucracy to actually get really quick with respect to trying to do something very innovative. They might be doing something innovative, but it requires 4 months of planning, which is why everybody was so impressed with the Oreo campaign during the Super Bowl 3 years ago, because they were like, wow, a big brand was able to be that nimble. So I think that that's one way that I define it. From an industry standpoint, I think there's a lot of differentiation also. Generally speaking, you see very little in the way of innovation in the more cautious categories like finance and, you know, biomedical, things like that.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hey.
Hi, great presentation. I'd like to talk a little bit about getting on the new thing when you mentioned to try new ads and, you know, the next thing that's popping up. I'm wondering if you can speak to that a little bit, maybe give us a little bit of insight about what particular social media sites you feel are up and coming that we could jump on, and maybe talk about the how relevant Snap is and where you see that going.
Yeah, so I guess to in some ways, like, both those questions tie into one another. I think Snapchat is, depending on the organization, definitely a place that's worth experimenting. Some brands have been on it for years at this point. A lot of brands are just jumping on right now. One key thing that you're going to see is that when people get on early on, they kind of figure out how to be great at it pretty quickly. Because there's no best practices, right? And they almost get to define the way that a brand executes on that. And fashion, actually, was one of the first on Snapchat. Now, at the same time, the problem then that we foresee is that once everybody's on it, it becomes a very crowded area. It's great because there are a lot of eyeballs there, so you're going to be able to attract more people. It's bad because there's going to be more competition for those eyeballs. So you can't do it and not do it, you know, at a B plus, A minus level at a minimum. You have to look at it and say, if I'm not going to do something at a B plus level, at least on any one particular social platform, you shouldn't be on that platform. You should be killing that and then putting those resources into a platform that you think you can do well on. I think another key thing is, and it depends on the size of the organization, but it's really important to try to make sure that the person who's doing the execution has a high degree of affinity for that platform. If you see something works, if you try out 10 different things and you notice one platform works and it speaks to you, then do more on it. I've done very little Vine ever, okay? And everybody was like, Vine's gonna be the next big thing. I'm like, I'm not going to be the next big thing on Vine. It doesn't speak to my core competencies and what I'm good at. So why should I get on Vine and suck at it, right? I mean, that's not a great advertisement for me as a personal brand. So I think that corporate brands have to be thinking the same way. If you can't do a good job at something, and if it doesn't work well with your brand, then spend your resources elsewhere.
I thought I saw a hand go up. No? Okay, well, while you're thinking, because we still have a few minutes, I'm going to throw my question in. So, Jeremy, can you comment on all these content marketing strategies and tools and techniques that you've shared are just fantastic. Can you just remark on the difference between an approach from a B2B company versus a B2C company? Is there a difference? What's the difference? How big is it? How small is it? Et cetera.
Oh, I love that question, because I think in some ways, actually, B2B, and I'm curious, how many folks here are B2B versus B2C? B2B, raise your hand, yep. So a decent number. I mean, I think that in some ways, I actually think it's easier with B2B, in particular from a while ago, because everybody used to be pandering on social media to try to hit as big numbers as possible, right? Like, that was the whole goal. I need to have like 9,000 people liking my page. And the reality is with B2B, if you didn't have that many potential buyers for your product in the first place, then you didn't have to be pandering as much for all of those likes. Now, with B2B, and actually Joel Ackerman spoke about this yesterday, there's a great opportunity in viral video, because B2B has not tried to make a viral video for the most part, right? LinkedIn is great for B2B. For a lot of B2C products, it still has an opportunity, and it's probably underutilized, but it's definitely not to the same extent as LinkedIn would be. I'll say, actually, SlideShare is great for B2B versus B2C. So. And then actually, in a lot of ways, CRM and taking advantage of that, that to me is one of those things that is almost evenly distributed between B2B and B2C. No matter what, knowing your customer better than the competition does is going to pay huge dividends.
Okay, Jeremy Goldman, thank you so much for a really outstanding presentation.
Thank you.